Two comics, three topics, 10 minutes each. The perfect podcast for your modern lifestyle. We're going to be talking today, later, about Eliza Schlesinger is a comic I had never heard of.
Really?
I try to avoid comedy. I try not to pay attention to it. I guess this won't infringe on the segment. I try to avoid it because I'm always worried that my memory's failing lately. I'm always worried that I'm going to see a joke and then forget I saw a joke and then write it a few months later.
Oh, sure. And by the way, anybody who claims that that could never happen to them is lying to themselves.
Yeah.
That is absolutely always a positive. If someone told me I did that with a joke and showed me the source material, I know I wouldn't have done it on purpose, but I would be like, well, boy, sorry. Not going to do that again.
Yeah, I know. It has happened to me.
Yeah.
It's I got called out for it, and I just went, oh, my gosh, I'm so sorry. And so ever since then, I've been paranoid of it. And now that my memory's getting worse because I'm getting older, I'm even more paranoid about it. So I tend not to pay attention. So I had no idea who Eliza Schlesinger is, but we're going to be talking about this. I definitely know who she is now. We're going to be talking to about her later in the second segment, and then also we're gonna travel over to Europe and talk about a bullfighter no spoiler here, he lost.
And when you lose a bullfight, boy.
Yeah, careful. I don't know how many jokes we got on that. That's our closing segment. We don't want to expire all the material. The first topic on the agenda is that over the weekend, a U.S. jet shot down a Syrian jet, which should not be a surprise, since I think we probably sold them to them.
You're right.
So we probably knew, it's exactly like, if you get Norton Utilities, Norton can probably find the hacks, the backdoors into your system software because it's theirs. So you sell Syria jet, you're probably pretty good. You could probably disable it.
Yeah. Fellas, there's an off switch in the back left wheel well.
And it's Norton Utilities. Is that even a thing anymore? I don't even know.
That's a good question. But there's also the old Bill Hicks joke about the first Iraq war. It says, well, they were worried that Saddam might have chemical weapons, and they were worried because they found the receipts.
But the interesting thing about the shootdown of the Syrian jet, and maybe a little bit beyond interesting, it might be a little frightening, is that Russia said, that's it, you are no longer allowed in Syrian airspace, United States, which comes pretty close to a declaration of war.
Mm-hmm. At the very least, it's a sort of Cold War.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Which for me is really interesting because we've been hearing for the past 7 months that Donald Trump is really good friends with the Russians. I keep wanting to say Soviets. That's how you know how old that Soviet communist thing.
That's like when you call the grocery store what it used to be before, like, the Hy-Vee bought it out, I went down to old Powell's Market. And you're like, yeah, it's been Powell's Market for 4 decades. That's a Hy-Vee.
It's we do that in the neighbor. I found that people in the suburbs do that. Is the house is always referred to as the house, the original owners of the house.
Yeah, the old Smith place or whatever. They haven't lived there for 23 years.
Yep. There was a place next door to us where they probably only lived there about 10 years, and the current residents next to my mom's house in Michigan, and the people next door have lived there now for 30 years, I think, and we still refer to it as the original owners. Curiously, and this has absolutely nothing to do with Russia and Syria. Maybe I'm avoiding the topic. I do not know. Frank Lloyd Wright homes are all known by the original owner, too.
So. Oh, sure. Well, it's like a status thing, I guess, too. You know, like you've commissioned it. It's like an art thing. Well, here's my Russia-Syria thing. I don't know. Not only do I think Trump and his campaign could have colluded with Russia, and this is still a thing, but it's actually why the Russia potential collusion, and at the very least, I think it's impossible to deny that Trump has a softer, friendlier view of Russia than anybody else in politics, just about, in American politics.
I totally disagree.
He praises Putin vocally on frequent occasions. And sanctions, Ukrainian sanctions, he called personally, his campaign orchestrated the softening of the Russia sanctions in the Republican Party platform. Well, he has a softer view of that than any. Oh, I mean, he has.
Is that he's more open to trade?
Could be. That's part of it. I'm not saying that's not part of it. You know?
Militarily, though. Which is, when it right comes right down to it, the last administration pretty much let them do whatever they want, and in fact, militarily, the last president actually told Putin that we would give them everything he wanted militarily, just as soon as the election was over, to essentially ignore the campaign rhetoric because he was going to have to talk tough. But after the election, you know, everything will be fine. And in those 8 years, we allowed Russia to have a nuclear advantage on us. They actually now outnumber our nuclear weapons. So,
well, I don't think number of nuclear weapons is necessarily the rubric that everybody is measuring things by. I mean, I think they were trying to avoid another nuclear arms race. That's a completely different policy perspective. Now, I'm not saying Obama wasn't too soft on Putin. I agree. Obama was too soft on Putin. I read a lot of Garry Kasparov, who's a very smart guy, and Kasparov was a fierce Obama critic and an even more fierce Trump critic. I mean, Trump has undeniably done more to try to soften and mainstreamize Putin's image than anybody. It's crazy, other than maybe Dana Rohrabacher, who's on the payroll.
Perhaps, but that's kind of, you know, that's kind of a business tactic.
Yes, because he's a moron. He thinks it's a business.
Yeah, but that's fine. Is you call up the guy and say, "How's the wife? How's the kids? Oh, by the way, I'm suing you. Bye."
According to Donald Trump Jr., they do an extreme amount of business with Russian banks, and they're heavily tied into Russia. And in Russia, everything is corrupt and tied into the government and the mob. It's a big mess. And so, sure.
Just like New York.
I think it's a little worse.
It's
a little worse.
That was called a joke of exaggeration.
But my concern all this time with the Trump Russia thing is not that Trump is actual like it, that Trump might think he's colluding with Russia and Putin might be helping Trump out because it's in his short term interest, but that for sure Putin is playing Trump. Putin is not Trump's friend, and I don't know how much Trump does or does not know that, but I definitely think Putin is infinitely savvier than Trump. And that worries me.
Perhaps, but it could be that Trump does not think he's his friend either. It could be a bluff.
It's possible. Although, famously, everybody who's ever dealt with Trump says that everyone who flatters him is his friend, and everyone who won't kowtow to his flattery is his enemy. And that's all it takes. And I truly think he is such an utter simpleton that any devious statesman could play him like a harp from hell.
Yeah, perhaps, I don't think you get on top of the empire that Trump has amassed by being stupid or soft or flexible or manipulatable. Well, I don't know that that's true. But I wanted to get back to this because the idea is that is right now there's no denying that that Russia tried to interfere with the election and may have actually interfered, even though there's no evidence that they actually interfered. The attempts certainly were there. But the assumption is that because Trump won, well, he obviously interfered on behalf of Trump. But unless he interfered with the Electoral College, if the Russians interfered, Hillary won by 3 million votes.
But the Electoral College is all that matters. If they could, I mean, if they could have swung 10,000 votes in a couple of key states, I don't think they did. I think their interference was more ideological, and they tried to literally, you know, screw with the machines and didn't succeed. But from Putin's perspective, it doesn't matter if Hillary wins, quote unquote. Or in fact, it's better for him if there's more instability and more uncertainty.
And it might be better if we had more than 10 minutes a segment. Sadly, we do not.
The Russians are interfering with the segments. In the third segment, we're going to be talking about a sporting event with a very definitive ending. Let's put it that way. before that, we could call this segment mansplaining. We should do a mansplaining trigger warning here because there's really no way to get around it that it's going to be two dudes talking about a women's comics issue.
Two white guys. Yeah. Two cis straight white guys.
It's true. And it's true. Talking. We're very aware of it. And I would add, you should also listen to the Jackie and Laurie podcast episode about this because they are very smart ladies who will have a lot to say about it. But I thought this was interesting. I think it's interesting from a guy's perspective because this is kind of a lady on lady crime in a way. And so we're at an interesting remove, I think. Don't you? You know,
like a lot of times there is a purient interest in lady on lady crime. Right.
Yes, this is an ideological catfight of sorts.
So yes. Let's dispel all notions that it's that we're actually getting a little enjoyment out of this.
No, and in fact, what got me pulled into this was actually our mutual friend Emily Galati, who got involved in this. Rather hilariously, I should add. She was very funny. So what happened was this comedian who – I'm surprised you've never heard of Eliza Schlesinger.
Yeah.
Surprised and not surprised. She's fairly prominent. She has a pretty big Netflix special.
Yeah, I don't watch Netflix specials.
No, fair enough. But she's, you know, she's one – you know, there's a lot of those comedians that – there's a surprising number of comedians that even if you're into comedy – you're like, I've never heard of that guy. And like, really? He just sold out a 400-seat small theater. You're like, really? You know, comedy has really...
That's actually a wonderful thing about comedy.
Oh, I agree.
Right now is that it's always been my goal since I was in comedy. It's to get that Lenny Bruce 100,000.
Yeah.
And basically, if we haven't brought this up before, is that it's believed Lenny Bruce said, I don't know if he ever did, I don't expect to get anyone. All I need is 100,000 people that'll give me $10 a year.
Yeah.
And that's ever since I heard that, I go, oh my gosh, that's brilliant. That's not even, you know, that's less than one third. That's like 1/3 of 1% of the U.S. population. That's all you have to do is to make that 100,000 devoted fans. And you can live a very nice life after that. So acquiring that 100,000 has always been a goal of mine. And today with the internet, it is possible. It is very achievable. And these comics are doing it. I've seen it. I've seen these comics that I go, you know, that I'll be, you know, working and they'll come in the next week and then, oh my gosh, it's people are lining out the door and around the block for this person I've never heard of. And I wondered if it was my age, but I don't think it's my age. It's just, I'm not one of their 100,000.
Right. Yeah. No, I agreed. And so she definitely has her 100,000. Eliza got in some trouble in an interview with Deadline. She was promoting a new show that she has. And, she was basically
new show where I didn't
on some ninth tier cable network. You know, okay. I don't have it here. It's
no, that's okay. That's okay.
I saw it earlier. It's called Forever 31 is the name of the show. It's on.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah, I saw that. Yep.
Yeah, I forget what network, but it's not even CISO. Yeah, it's, you know, one of those new cable networks.
Sure.
But hey, again, you only need so many people to watch that stuff. You can kind of get your Lenny Bruce 100,000 on TV now as well. which is cool.
Yeah, which is what Lena Dunham did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. Oh, yeah.
It's fortunately for her, that her 100,000 was either in L.A. or New York.
Yeah. That's 100% true.
Even though Bill O'Reilly was pulling better ratings than Girls, it stayed on HBO for that reason.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. She was trendy with the right crowd. Yep. But so what Elijah said was that here was her quote about other female comics. She was kind of bagging on other female comics. And she said, "I could walk into the Improv, close my eyes, and I can't tell one girl's act apart from another." That's not saying – and then she says that's not to say that white guys don't also do that or whatever. But then she says, "I think I'm the only woman out there that has a joke about World War II in my set."
Yeah, when I read that, I had heard am I interrupting you here?
No. That was where my jaw dropped too.
When I heard that, it's immediately thought of Emily Galati.
It's the first thing I thought of too.
She's got a master's in history.
Yeah, and half her act is about the Cold War and World War II and the Kennedy administration. I mean, it's like,
What was funny to me was Eliza seemed, reading between the lines, it seemed like she was bragging about knowing what World War II was.
Yeah.
You know?
It's
almost like saying, well, you know, I'm the only one who did, you know, I have 20 minutes on the Napoleonic conquests. You know what I mean? It sounded like that. Was, I got a joke on World War II. Yeah, you know what? So did my dad.
My grandpa actually made jokes about World War II in World War II. It was pretty impressive. He was improvising that stuff. It was happening all around him.
One of my favorite Bugs Bunny jokes. Is they did this one where they had Jack Benny as a mouse. I think it was a mouse.
Oh yeah.
And he goes down to his vault.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes, "Hello, Mr. Benny." It's like, "Hello," I forget what the guy in the vault who runs the vault is. Is the war over yet? Yes, it's over. What do you think they'll do with the Kaiser? Yeah. I love that joke. And even as a kid, I thought I was really hip because I knew, you know, it's I got it.
It's a history joke. And yeah.
That's a World War I joke.
Yeah. you have to know the distinction between the two, you know. It's but it's funny. Yeah, so Emily responded to
take that, Eliza Schlesinger.
Yeah, well, Emily responded to Eliza Schlesinger, which I thought was great. She replied, "I've got tons of World War II jokes in my act. I'll rewrite yours and add punchlines." It was like, ooh, God, Emily's definitely funnier than Eliza Schlesinger. Now, what's interesting is that what Eliza said has a tinge of truth to it, and it's something that I've heard Emily complain about. I've heard many other female comics complain about, which was really more that when Amy Schumer hit it big, as when any comic hits it big, like when Hedberg hit it big, you're going to get imitators, for sure. And Amy Schumer, hey, I mean, maybe that's most of what she does, is cutesy girl voice vagina jokes. And you got a lot of Amy Schumer knockoffs. Looks at the same way you got a lot of Hedberg knockoffs back in the day.
Sure.
And so I see Eliza's point in that, like, she's not wrong in that there were a lot of women comics speaking in that voice. But it's bizarrely ignorant to be a working comic and not be able to just list off a bunch of women comics who have great distinctive, you know. I mean, Laurie and Jackie, right off the top. Wendy Liebman, Emily Galati, Andy Erickson, Amber Preston. Like, it's not difficult to do.
Martha Kelly.
Maria Bamford. You know, like, we could literally probably do 50 names.
Yeah.
I mean, it's...
Yeah. Yep.
And it's not they're all not even famous, but they're all doing stuff. And some of them are really famous, too, by the way. You know, like... So it was weird. But she was...
Yes. However, she was also talking about the Hollywood Improv, I believe, correct?
Yeah, and that's true. She did specifically name a club. And I don't know.
Basically, what the Hollywood Improv is famous for is good-looking people doing a passable 5 minutes.
And that applies to dudes too, I'm guessing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I did not put gender on that. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
That's basically what it is. It's because if you're a good-looking person that can do a passable 5 minutes, you're gonna and you do it regularly at the improv, you're probably gonna get representation.
Interesting.
That's just the way it is. You're gonna you know, you're just throwing out that bait, and hopefully a casting agent goes, that's it. You know, that's if you've got comfort, you mm-hmm. know, in delivering a line humorously, it's like, yes, we want you on the show. We want you to be the wacky neighbor on the sitcom we're developing. So that's basically what it is. So I think she probably was not incorrect in her observation of the Hollywood improv.
You know, she did the classic Hitchens. Mistake, don't you think, of just taking a fairly narrow personal range of personal experience and assuming that it fully extrapolates to the macro.
Yes, yeah, absolutely wrong. Because you know what? She was what? She's one of those.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't know what her five was that got her that skyrocketed her to fame, but I'm sure that's what it was. She's an attractive girl. Got a nose job for her bat mitzvah, and probably had a passable 5 minutes, and now she's a superstar.
Yeah, I've never known that much about her act, but I went to her Instagram, or I went to her Facebook page when this all blew up, because I was trying to find the interview, because I was curious why all these lady comics friends of mine were upset. And the first four or five pictures I found were bikini selfies before I could find the interview. And I was like, well, there's a little pot and kettle going on here at best. You know?
Exactly.
And I'm not calling the kettle black, but I am calling the kettle about 30 seconds over the 10-minute limit. So we're going to segue out into the final segment. And on the final segment of Rule of Three, we went from... cat fights to bullfights, shall we say? How's that for a transition? It's interesting. As soon as I brought this story up, you with my my rather lo-fi take on it, you seemed really interested in it right away. So there was a rather famous Spanish matador named Ivan Fandino. Oh, what a great name, Fandino.
sounds like a brand of Italian food.
It does. Well, that's probably why I like it so much. But the good news is, if you want to name your kid Ivan Fandino, the name is now open. no ocupado. the Spanish matador Ivan Fandino died Saturday after being gored during the – it's funny. The way that this reads really poorly, the copy editor at CNN is terrible. It says here he was gored in the French region of Landes. It's like, oh, I didn't know you could bleed out from your French region of Landes. Terrible copy editing at CNN. Terrible copy editing.
Well, I would not want to be gored in my French region either.
No. Oh, yeah. Ooh, I mean, I'd rather get gored in the Alps. And by the way, so when I said this to you, as I said, well, I'd be up for talking about this because I'm always delighted when a bullfighter dies, which is true. And I'm not one of those gore hounds. Like, I never root for NASCAR accidents or anything. But when a bullfighter dies, I always just think, well, good. Because it's just such a rigged – they call them bullfighters, but it's not like you wander out in the middle of a pasture with a piece of wood, you know. It's like it's not alligator wrestling. It's like, no, we got a team on hand to make sure that if I'm ever losing for a second, they distract the bull, and then I just stab it multiple times. And at the end, everyone's like, oh, yeah, you totally won. Not a fan. And so if you're into the bullfighting schadenfreude, to mix my international – linguistic metaphors. He was gored by the bull after he tripped on his cape. as an American, how is it? It's so hard not to be delighted by that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
The slapstick.
Yeah, here in America, I think the last person to trip on his cape in America was Elvis.
Yes. So that's good.
It kind of puts bullfighting in its perspective. But I will say something is that you know, I've always said that if I had my if I were a bull and I had my choice, I would much rather pick the bull ring. I would, you know, number one, you get to keep your nads. Mm-hmm. You know, you are not made a steer at an early age,
right?
And number two, it's you do have a chance. You know, my attitude is that if you win, you win your, you know, like gladiators. I think the bulls should win their freedom.
Oh, they just kill them, though. But they should absolutely win their freedom. I mean, they just won essentially a rigged fight.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's not as rigged as, you know, because people say all the time that hunting's a sport. Well, it's, you know, the hunting requires both participants having knowledge that it's a sport. Is the way that one goes.
Yeah, at least when a crazy rich guy lets a homeless guy loose on an island and chases after him, at least he tells the homeless guy he's coming.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You might not have signed up for it. You know, you might not have realized that the bullfights, you know, were recruiting. It's like, gosh, I wonder if I can get into the majors this season. You know, it might be unwilling, but at least once you get out of the bull ring, the bull says, oh, okay, I think I know what's going on here.
Yeah.
So I don't have a chance, but dang it, I am going to go for it.
Yeah, and I always thought hunters had more in common with assassins than soldiers.
Yeah,
I mean, you sit up in a tree and wait for somebody to wander down and then shoot them while they're dipping down for a drink of water. I'm not looking down on hunting, but, you know, come on.
Well, whenever I hear a story of a bullfighter getting it.
Mm-hmm.
And losing, I guess, and they don't have a, they should have a scoreboard.
It's Matadors been 0 days without an accident. They flip that thing back over.
But it always, I'm always reminded it's an old classic joke that I really don't want to get into, but basically, is a person goes into a restaurant and sees somebody enjoying the testicles of the bullfight, and it's this huge dish, and there's a procession and everything that goes on, and he makes arrangements to get that one year, you know, because they're long waiting list, and they come and they put down this little plate with just like two hors d'oeuvres on it, and it's yeah you're already there, but the punchline is Senor, the Matador does not always win.
Is this a thing? Someone's excited to eat the bull's testicles?
I don't know. I would imagine. I know that there's a festival. There's a festival in Colorado every. Well, actually, there's a name for it. You can go into restaurants and order Rocky Mountain oysters.
Rocky Mountain oysters, absolutely. There's a really funny scene in Chevy Chase's Funny Farm based on that.
Yeah. So it is. But I don't. And I would imagine the testicles of the bullfight are the, you know, it's because they're going to be bigger, because, you know, the ones you get in the Rocky Mountains, those are from little calves.
Yeah.
Who are gonna grow up singing for the boys choir,
singing soprano. Yeah.
But
do you feel this? Like, it's not that I like if I was at a bullfight. Well, first off, I could never go to a bullfight. Is probably the number one thing I think sounds the most fascinating in a way, like culturally, that I would never want to go to, because I don't want to see the bull get killed. But I don't want to. I mean, it's like I want to see the guy get killed. But I just feel like when you hear about him getting killed, you're just like, oh, cosmic justice, you know?
Yeah, sure. I don't know. I think if I were in Spain, mm-hmm. if I were traveling in Spain, I think it would be very difficult for me not to want to go see a bullfight. It's a centuries old sport. Mm-hmm. It's a Spanish tradition. It's Hemingway loved them,
right? Famous, yeah. Death in the Afternoon. And all.
Yeah, how could I resist? How could I resist seeing something like this? I might be like the only one in Wrigley Field rooting for the Mets. I might be there with my horns and my shirt that says "Go Bulls." Put on a bull shirt and some Viking horns and root against the Matador. But yeah, I would. Uh, I would see it. I would watch it. I would sit through it. I might cringe. I might go, ow. But yeah, sure. Why not? And I love steak.
No, I can't, so do I. So I mean, there's definite hypocrisy going on here, without question. I fully admit to my utter hypocrisy. But I don't know. There just seems so, and that's what makes the tripping over the cape part so funny. Is it's like they're so proud of outsmarting this bull that's been dazed and you know all this. And it's like, and did I stab him with my little sword? And I am the man. And it's like. So you think about him tripping over that poncy cape, wearing his little tap shoes and his little spangly shoulder epaulets gleaming in the sunlight.
Is that called the suit of lights or something like that? Is that what
that's? Yeah, you imagine this little pencil mustache turning at a weird angle as his eyes get big and he realizes he's made a grave miscalculation. It's like, ironically, my favorite opera is about bullfighting, and my favorite character is the bullfighter. So it's a shame we don't have the copyright. We could do the Toreador song. On the way out. It's my favorite aria.
How old is that?
Carmen's from 1890s, I think.
It should be public domain by now.
Oh, yeah. That's true. There's got to be a public domain. Well, hopefully we'll have an outro. It's the Toreador song. It's great.
No, our outros are all provided by Stone Bogart. It's CDs available on iTunes and Amazon, I think, is Stone Bogart's the band. They've been doing our intro and outro now. I don't know if we've given enough credit. Travis Randall is a buddy, has provided us the copyright for them, so we do use it for the intro and outro. It's Feel Better is actually our intro and outro song for anyone that's curious there.
Yeah, that's a good plug. Yeah, we should definitely don't plug them enough. And good call on that one. And hey, speaking of plugs, it's about that time. Want to plug your Twitter and your Facebook and whatnot?
Yeah. Tweet us if you don't want to leave a comment on iTunes or Podbean. That's fine too. Yeah. You can just tweet us. I'm at Tim Slagle, and you can also go to my website timslagle.com.
Yep, and you can hit me up at brianmillercomedy.com or at realbrianmiller with a Y on Twitter. Shout out to Eddie Berry. For a really funny comment that reminded me, he made a Tim Slagle BDSM joke, and I was like, "What's Eddie talking about?" And then I was like, "Oh yeah, that's right, you made the joke first."
I would gladly have filled in for Robin when he was being tortured by the Catwoman.
So good call on that to Eddie Berry, and drop us a shout out on Twitter and Facebook, and leave a comment on iTunes and help us move up the ranks and give us some feedback.
And we'll see you next week.
See you next week.